Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So happy to be joined by Kelly Leonard. Kelly, how are you doing here today?
I'm thrilled to be out of the house.
I was thrilled. It was about a week ago I put on pants, and I'm like, I think this is the first time I put on pants in 6 months.
Yeah, I have not tied shoes in a very long time.
Did you still remember how to do it?
Yeah. Okay. I got here. Okay, I got the directions. I was here. Good.
That's great. Longtime creative executive at the Second City. How are you guys holding on?
Well, it's tough not having the live shows. Yeah. That's a burden. But it's kind of amazing how we've pivoted to doing classes online, corporate workshops online. We're doing tons of Zoom improv shows, a lot for corporations that just want their people to have, like, a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's interesting how the marketplace changes, right? So before we come in, like, innovation, creativity. Now there's, like, just make us laugh.
Yes,
you know, anything. Or can you help us be more resilient? Mm-hmm. And, of course, improvisation is all about that. So I feel excited that we've made this pivot and that it'll stay. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll always have this digital landscape, but I'm real eager to get back in a theater and laugh with people.
I can't wait. I mean, there's nothing better than sitting in a club, having a drink, if that's what you so choose to do,
yeah,
relaxing and just being enveloped in it.
It's better music when it's, theater, I miss all that. Yeah. But I think, you know, we're
a little
year
bit
away.
We're a little
least.
Bit away, yeah. Got to manage our expectations. All right, Kelly, we're going to have you continue on after the news because we're excited to talk to Ken Quapis, director of The Office. He's not that into you. Bernie Mac, so many projects he's been involved in, and we're excited to chat about that. And, of course, you can hear Kelly's Getting to Yes And podcast at WGNradio.com. John Hansen here on WGN. Kelly Leonard here as well. Thanks for sticking around, Kelly.
Thanks for letting me crash this thing.
Oh, of course. We're so excited to talk to Mr. Ken Quapis, who is he's so well known for so many things. I think a lot of people would recognize, of course, The Office. I've binge watched it so many times over this quarantine. I imagine a lot of you have as well. He's just not that into you. Larry Sanders Show, Bernie Mac, so many things. Ken, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
And I know Kelly's got a podcast coming out with an interview you guys did. I heard that conversation went well, so I figured I'd get Kelly here just in case I'm so bad at it. Kelly
can jump in.
Yes, Kelly can take over for me.
How's it going, Ken?
Happy to have both of you, and I had a great time, Kelly, having our conversation.
And we'll plug that podcast and where you can hear the whole thing in just a little bit. Ken, I have a very basic question for you as we take a look at the top of your book here, but what I really want to do is direct Lessons from a Life Behind the Camera. A director, what exactly, in the shortest terms, for people that have never been on a set or maybe don't know everything behind the scenes of a TV or a movie show, what is the director responsible for?
Well, I mean many things, but generally, you're overseeing the cast and the crew on the set, and what that means is you're in charge of rehearsing the scene, you're in charge of telling the cinematographer where you'd like to put the camera, you're in charge, I mean, basically, you're a people manager, and I would say that one of the things I write about a lot in the book is, you know, something you don't learn in film school, and that's how to kind of create an atmosphere on a set where people bring their best efforts, where people feel acknowledged and respected, and so I think that, the one thing I'll add, in addition to overseeing a group of people, is you need to kind of be a generalist. You need to know a little bit about everyone's job, but you don't need to be an expert at anything. Mm.
So, Ken, there's a caricature of famous directors that I think is widely true, that a lot of them were, a lot of famous ones, were really tyrants. And you kind of go the other way in your style, right?
I have no choice. I wasn't built that way. when you go to film school, and you know, if you're a film fan, I mean, there are so many stories enshrined in film lore about, you know, directors who, you know, work a crew to death to get some complicated shot, or, you know, it's stories about angry eruptions on the set. And I just and a lot of people feel that's what you need to be that way to be a director. And in fact, it's total nonsense. You don't need to be that way at all. And so, I mean, not that my book is a corrective, but I do feel that, you know, a lot of aspiring directors assume they have to be a jerk in order to get the job done, and you don't.
I just love reading a memoir of someone who's reached such success and has so many great credits to their name, but Most importantly, to hear the story of how they got there. I think a lot of people, when they look to try and get into these fields, it's almost intimidating to hear from people like you. But to hear the story makes the pathway a little bit more navigable. Your start and at a young age working with Big Bird. I mean, the stories are incredible. Tell us a little bit about your journey getting started.
Well, I'll tell you about the first job interview I ever had, because the first thing I ever directed as a professional, this is 1983, I think, if I get my math right, I think that's 37 years ago. I directed a CBS Afternoon Playhouse, which was a short film for children. This was CBS's answer to the ABC After School Special, which was very popular at the time. But anyways, the person overseeing that a particular episode was none other than Bob Keeshan, known to most people as Captain Kangaroo. So my first job interview was with Captain Kangaroo, and I was quite intimidated to sit in the room with the captain. And at a certain point in the interview, he kind of ran out of things to ask me, and he said, "Ken, so tell me, how were your grades in school?" And I froze, because in fact I didn't finish my degree. I left school to get a job, and I left several classes incomplete, and they would eventually, of course, turn into Fs. So I froze, and I thought, oh my God, the captain's going to call my school and get my transcript and see that I didn't complete my classes. So I fibbed.
Made it through.
I lied to Captain Kangaroo about my grades.
So what's interesting about that, too, is you go on later in the book to actually, that's a little chapter, basically, on taking a meeting. And that might seem like a thing, why would you focus so much in? But this is a huge thing in Hollywood, right? The taking of a meeting. And so kind of take us through a little bit of your checklist of how you can successfully navigate that situation.
Well, again, the first step is to get in the door, which I don't actually talk about much. But once you're in the meeting, there's a couple of things that I try and do. And one of them is I actually try to imagine what my perceived weakness is and hit it head on. And I'll just give you one example, and that is I directed the film The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. And when I met with the producer, my first meeting with the producer, I think one of the first things I said was, "I'm not a teenage girl, and I'm not part of the demographic that this film will be aimed at." And so I wanted to almost immediately kind of address something that I knew the producer was thinking about. And then I proceeded to, talk about why I had such passion for the material, et cetera. When I met Jim Henson to direct Sesame Street Presents Follow That Bird, pretty quickly in the meeting, I just kind of took a chance and said, I've never directed a puppet before. And, the meeting could have gone off the rails at that point. Instead, Jim was so gracious and just said, "Well, just talk to the puppeteers like they're actors." And we suddenly got into a great, great discussion about treating puppeteers as actors. So that's one important tip.
Mm-hmm.
The other one I would say is very important is not being afraid in a job interview to say what you don't know. For instance, not sort of saying that you don't have a certain experience, like I've never directed a puppet, but if you don't, if you're it's sometimes really a strength to sort of admit what you don't know in a meeting. It's a way of sort of telling the interviewer that you're not trying to pull the wool over their eyes. And I think that can actually be a really powerful tool used in the right way.
Especially you're establishing right from the get-go a relationship of honesty with someone that you're going to be working for. I don't want to dive right into The Office because you've done so many things, but it's one of those few shows that when you look at the title of an episode, you can almost identify every single plot point in it. Or maybe I'm just speaking to someone who's been to watch the show, seven, eight, nine times. I don't know. You get to the last one, you start back at the beginning. But as I'm looking through the episodes that you directed of the 13, The Job, Gay Witch Hunt, Casino Night, Booze Cruise, I know exactly what ones those are. And one of my favorite things, and this is the question I want to ask the most, is because there's so many parts in The Office where Michael Scott is cringe-worthily, it's almost hard to watch. And because it's cringeworthy, some of the things that Michael Scott does, and I'm thinking of Gay Witch Hunt particularly. So I want to know, when you are filming that, when you're directing that, and everyone's around doing these scenes, you must know what are going to be the cringeworthy scenes on the other end when you're, when the viewer at home is watching it. Does that make it that much more fun to do it? Do you really milk it as much as you can? Because I hope so, because it's just so hard to watch, and I imagine it's so fun to shoot.
Well, there, I would say two things you should know, and you know, a lot of people wonder if The Office was an improvised show. In fact, it's not at all. There are some moments that are improvised, but it's a very tightly scripted show that sounds improvised. And so, you know, we always knew what we were heading into in any given scene. I would say one of the biggest challenges, you know, especially doing scenes with Steve Carell, you know, acting in a very cringeworthy way, was just trying not to laugh. I mean, I would say that you know, among the cast members, everyone sort of worked really hard to kind of, you know, bite their tongue in the middle of these scenes, particularly those scenes in the conference room, like Gay Witch Hunt, where, like, you know, Michael stands up in front of everyone and just makes an embarrassing spectacle of himself. I mean, mostly what I was keeping an eye on was, oh my gosh, is Phyllis going to break now? Is Jenna going to start laughing?
Yeah.
I have a funny story about Steve. Adam McKay was in a touring company with Nancy, who is now his wife, and they were in Dallas, and they wanted to do a trick, and Steve was down there visiting Nancy, and so Adam asked for a volunteer from the audience and brought up Steve, who everyone just thought was a regular guy, because he's very good at that. And then Adam proceeded to humiliate him so much that he cried. and the audience was just... they were abhorrent. They were so mad at the company. But that is because Steve is such a good actor. And I wonder, too, was it your working with Gary Shandling that might have set you up a little bit for understanding how cringe can work in comedy?
Well, I think there were a lot of cringeworthy things in, you know, the Larry Sanders Show. But I think with Steve, I'm going to go back to Steve for a second. Yeah. I think that what's really important about the character of Michael Scott is he often says the most impolitic things, you know, truly offensive things, but he's so determined to be liked. He's so determined that his, you know, employees think of him as a great boss, or he's so determined that the documentary crew catches his, you know, quote, comic brilliance, that you cut him a lot of slack because he's so eager to please. Mm-hmm. And even though what comes out of his mouth sometimes is you know, patently offensive. So I think one of the great things that Steve did is he makes you kind of root for Michael Scott, even when Michael Scott is saying stupid things.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You watch and you go, why is he? But I hope he does. And then he does. Ken, I hope it's okay. We're going to take a quick commercial break. You mind sticking around for a little bit longer?
Sure, please.
All right, plenty more with Ken and Kelly Leonard here, too, on WGN. Joined by Ken Kwapis and Kelly Leonard here in studio. Ken wrote the book, But What I Really Want Is to Direct: Lessons from a Life Behind the Camera. As someone who likes to be in front of the camera, I respect people like you, Ken, a lot, making people like us look better. Is this book, do you think, people for have that interest in directing, or do you think there's a takeaway for anyone interested in any sort of field to dive in?
Oh, I think, well, first of all, the book is aimed at anyone who aspires to, you know, try directing film or television. But, you know, it's also aimed at anyone who wants a behind-the-scenes peek at what the directing process is like. And again, I've worked with such a crazy array of very talented people. And I think that, you know, if you're a fan, you'll just enjoy the stories. But I also feel that anyone who wants to, you know, enter any competitive field will appreciate my experiences trying to develop, you know, resilience and tenacity in a hugely unpredictable business. So I think there's a lot here for everyone.
One of the things that we explored in our conversation is the fact that I really read this as a leadership book. And there's a Harvard professor, a business professor who I had on, who talked about the need for leaders to be in the balcony and the dance floor. They have to go back and forth from that. And that reminded me of the way you talk about Video Village. And so I wonder if you can sort of, for the audience, tell them what that is and then what your approach is when you're directing in that scenario.
Oh, sure. Well, briefly, you know, on most film and television sets, directors sit in chairs next to video monitors. And this hasn't always been the case. I mean, once upon a time, a director would stand next to the camera, so you'd be near the actors, near the cast. But now there's this kind of, you know, kind of almost, I mean, it's called Video Village. It's like a lot of chairs for a lot of people, and it's, you know, who are watching what's going on video monitors. And I feel what happens, my feeling about this, not everyone will agree with me, not all directors will agree with me, but I feel like it's a mistake to be away from the cast. It's a mistake to be, you know, 25, 50 yards away watching a monitor when you could have the best seat in the house right next to the camera. And when you call cut and the actors look up, the first face they should see is the director's. You know, I've been on many sets where the director calls cut and the director's sitting 50 yards away and the actors are kind of sitting on their hands waiting for some direction. And you know, finally, you know, the director bellows through a megaphone, you know, from far away. And I feel like it's an idea that's so old-fashioned, but people forget that the strongest place to be is right next to the camera.
I always appreciate instant reactions from someone who can tell me it's straight, good or bad. There's a confidence building in that and a relationship between a director and an actor, I imagine. As I look through your credits, Ken, and again, we talked a little bit about The Office. You've done Malcolm in the Middle episodes, The Bernie Mac Show, and even an episode of Parks and Recreation, Larry Sanders. Okay, I'll stop embarrassing you. But what I want to know is, as we binge watch all your work, do you ever binge watch? You watch your old stuff? How do you handle that as someone who is so intimately involved in it?
I'm a little afraid sometimes to go back and watch things. And recently I actually did have to, I was a guest on a podcast hosted by Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, an Office related podcast. And they wanted me to talk about the show Casino Night. So I went back and looked at it for the first time in maybe a decade. And I thought, oh my gosh, am I just going to see all my mistakes? But it's actually, I was very pleasantly surprised at how well it holds up. So I certainly don't review my work over and over again. But that one I was happy to look at.
Oh, that's good.
You said the word mistake, and I think that's an important thing inside this book. Because in improvisation, we always talk about seeing all obstacles as gifts. And you talk about reframing problems as opportunities. So why is that so important in your creative work?
Well, I think that, I mean, there's so many different versions of reframing problems as opportunities. I mean, I think as a director, you know, for instance, if you're outside shooting a scene in the afternoon in daylight, you know, invariably it'll start raining. So instead of like complaining about the poor weather service, you have to like, you know, turn this around and figure out how to kind of restage or reconceive a moment. And so, I mean, literally, something will always go, when, you know, something will go wrong, you know, a prop won't show up, an important prop won't show up. You know, you're shooting a Western and the prop guns aren't there. So what do? You have to kind of figure out how to, again, turn lemons into lemonade. And I think for a lot of directors, you know, that for me is, you know, that's the adventure of it, is sort of getting to, you know, kind of make those choices when, you know, when things are not going your way. So I'm it's one of the most exciting parts of the job.
I got to ask, obviously things have changed so drastically now, and we have some shoots back up and trying to operate in this new era. Have you had a chance to work on anything recently? Are you worried moving forward? What's your, I guess, your two cents from an insider perspective about where Hollywood goes from here?
Well, I would say early in the pandemic, there was just a lot of talk among producers and studio executives and creative people about developing stories that could be done with small crews and small casts. I mean, I was on several Zoom calls with, you know, producers saying, you know, can you come up with great stories that involve two people? And I think that, you know, clearly now production is back up and running, and there are a lot of protocols in place that make it safe. I have not directed during the pandemic and don't expect to until the new year, but I do talk to people who are making it work. I mean, it's slower, you know, everything has to be done more carefully, but I think the protocols are in place and people are doing it now.
I am interviewing someone for the podcast this afternoon, and I was doing my notes before I came in here, and he tells a story of this FDA doctor who never approved a single drug because it was easier, because he won't get in trouble. So literally in his entire career, this guy, it's called, and Nestor is his name, so it's called, and the people talk about nestering. And you talk in the book about making the adventure of actually making a choice. Talk to us about that, because I think that that's a thing people don't recognize. A lot of people just don't do it because they're scared.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had the pleasure, by the way, of mentoring a lot of up-and-coming directors. And one of the things I've observed with a lot of you know, up-and-comers is that they don't make choices on the set. And if you don't make a choice, it'll get made for you, and you will not be part of that process. So I really encourage, and you know, people can get very, very paralyzed about which, you know, am I going to pick the red dress or the green dress for the, you know, for the lead in this scene. It, for me, it's like, make the choice. You can, like, worry about whether it was a good choice later, but I think of it as an adventure to, you know, make these choices. And, again, I've watched too many young directors sort of being, you know, paralyzed by the process.
Yeah. Kelly Leonard, by the way, joining me in studio, in case you're just joining us. Ken Kwapis, director of many things, joining us on the phone line. So glad to have Kelly on, who speaks the language of this. And me, the basic interviewer, asking silly questions like the one I'm about to ask. What project did you like working on the most? I guess what I'm asking is, when you woke up in the morning, what project were you so excited to tackle that day? And I think that a lot of people can relate when they have a job that they love. It's like any job. I'm sure there's days you do and don't love it. But was there certain days that you would wake up and you just couldn't wait to get to work?
Oh, my gosh. I'll say two things, and this is kind of from both ends of my career. It was, I could not wait to direct the series finale of The Office. So I directed the pilot, and I directed, you know, many episodes along the way, but I was invited back by the showrunner, Greg Daniels, to bring down the curtain to direct the finale, and it was so wonderful. I hadn't been on the show for a while, but it was so wonderful to see this thing that you, this, how this seed you helped plant grew into this giant tree, and to see, you know, for instance, characters who at the beginning of the series didn't even have dialogue, they weren't, you know, really fleshed out as characters, become, you know, fully developed and beloved by audiences. So that was a job where I just was so thrilled to be there every day of that. And then the other thing, going back to the beginning, I found working with Jim Henson's Muppets to be utterly just so magical, and you know, the, I mean, I would say that working on Follow That Bird, it was hard to direct sometimes because I was just sort of like, I just felt like a little kid. When Carol Spinney gets into that costume, it's so enchanting. Occasionally, I would just sort of gawk. And so there's, I mean, again, I was sort of so awed by the simple magic of, it's not simple really, but it's the magic of those puppets and the beauty of those characters.
And you say, Ken, you say in the book too, what you learned some stuff from Carol Spinney in particular on that set that affected all your directing choices in the future.
It's funny because when I started directing that film, I really thought of Big Bird as an object. And by the way, there, you know, it's not an easy thing to figure out how to compose shots with an 8-foot bird. So, I mean, for me, the challenge was how to film this thing. But over the course of the shooting, what happened is I got very tuned into, very emotionally connected with Big Bird's story. And this may sound silly, but in fact, it's a very profound story. It's a story about, you know, leaving home to find home. It's a story about finding your own people. I mean, it's a story about understanding the value of diversity, because what happens is Big Bird decides at the outset that he's convinced he'll be happier if he lives with a bird family. And then, in fact, he realizes by the end that, you know, what he is most happy with is the diversity on Sesame Street. So it's a very powerful stuff. And it wasn't, you know, I didn't get there at the beginning. Again, I just looked at Big Bird as a kind of beautiful object to photograph. And by the end of the shooting, I feel like I was, this is going to sound funny, but I was walking in Big Bird's shoes a little bit. And I was able to sort of start looking at scenes from the inside out. And in the book, I say basically it took an 8-foot bird to, you know, teach me that my job as a director was to be a student of human nature.
But what I really want to do is direct lessons from behind the camera, Ken Kwapis, wherever books are sold. Thank you so much, Ken. We appreciate it. Kelly, thank you for the depth into this, and you can get more getting to Yes And on WGNRadio.com and wherever podcasts are. Thank you so much, Kelly.
Thank you.